white girl.
Ooh, get you.
Lay down and boogie. Play that funky music today.
Ooh, it's a glimpse of you that I've never seen. A sight of you.
Shireen!
Oh my God,
play
Jenny.
That funky music.
Pretty bad. Anyway, do you know what? Hello, Judith.
Hello, Jenny.
What are you doing here? Oh, I haven't got my microphone in front of my face. I've just finished my lunch. I've gone into a slump.
You have, haven't you? I know.
I really enjoyed that Leon kale and chicken Caesar salad.
Did you? Are you just reviewing it? Just going over it again?
Yes, indeed. That's a 4-star luncheon.
Was it?
I would say so.
Very nice.
You came in with a pre-prepared...
Well, I did. I was very, very well organised.
You had last night's leftovers.
I did. I had last night's oven-roasted vegetable thing.
Yeah, you see, my roasted vegetables never look like your roasted vegetables.
Well, how do they look?
Well, yours look quite slimy, like swimming in quite a lot of oil. Mine always a bit dried up and crunchy.
Yeah, so I suppose somewhere in the middle might be better, mightn't it?
Yeah.
But do you put olive oil on your, when you're oven roasting?
Of course I do. Yeah. How else would you do it?
Well, I'm just wondering, just checking.
Yeah.
I know your cooking skills aren't that acclaimed. But anyway, sorry, yes.
Absolutely. I bought all the ingredients for, I was going to do this really tricky chicken thigh recipe from a Diana Henry book.
Oh, I don't know.
Do you know Diana Henry?
I do not.
She's very good, actually. And it had all plums, and I got everything for this thing. And then I read the rest.
Plums this time of year?
Well, yes, but I found some, Judith.
What? Ridiculous.
They might not be in your back garden, but they're in my Sainsbury's.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was chicken thighs and plums. And then I had everything, and then it had a pomegranate and cashew nuts.
Oh, God, it sounds revolting.
Well, no, it doesn't. It just sounds rather modern and a bit Ottolenghi. Anyway,
modern.
It's a modern casserole dish. And then at the end it said pomegranate molasses.
Oh, how ridiculous.
I didn't have any fucking pomegranate molasses.
Well, what the hell is pomegranate molasses?
Well, that's
anyway.
I got it off the internet. You know what? You can get stuff from Amazon. I just ordered some pomegranate.
Never.
I can't even say it. I'm going to have another run up to that. I ordered some pomegranate molasses. Off Amazon, and it arrived the next day. Lovely label on the bottle
Well. What do you mean it arrived next day? What are you supposed to do with all the stuff in your saucepan?
Well, I'd made something else by then.
Oh, dear.
I just redid the chicken in another direction.
Well, it serves you
right. I went in a curry direction.
Did you? Well, yeah. It serves you right
for
doing a
for supper and
stupid stew like that.
It wasn't a stew.
Basically, it was a stew with stupid things in it.
No, a stew is a very old-fashioned thing. I do casseroles. I don't do stews.
You do casseroles.
Should we have a big argument? Have we had a really big row on the podcast? Let's fall out. I'm
shall
not
we?
Talking to you.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's wrong with you? How's everything going?
How's everything going? It's okay. Yeah, no, it's fine.
You've been to the doctors this week.
Funny you should say that.
Oh, God.
Funny you should say that. I have been to the doctors this week.
You didn't think you had the corona?
No. Well, obviously I have momentarily from time to time, clearly.
Yeah.
No, I think, do you know, my anxiety was so bad in China, if I'm honest. It was really, really bad in China.
And that was even before the virus.
Yeah. God knows what it would have been like if I was there now.
Can you imagine?
But Mike did say to me during that, he says, look, do you think you ought to see somebody about your anxiety? Because it was, I mean, I know I had a little bit of a sort of coach crash.
Yeah.
Slash little bit.
You ended up in
of,
hospital, Judith. Yeah, it wasn't a little bit of a.
I mean,
you thought you had concussion.
In, but anyway.
They but didn't, I do. But you did.
Yeah. But I think my anxiety was getting out of control. And it's particularly bad, I think, when I'm a long way away from home like that. And when I'm flying and everything. So I thought, well, I've seen the doctor as something ordinary, so I did mention it. And he said, well, I tell you what, would you be interested in a worry group? A worry group.
Goodness.
I nearly said a worry clinic. But I think it's probably the same time. A worry group. So apparently...
It's a bit like being an alcoholic.
Yes, actually, yeah. I suppose it is, yeah.
And you go and admit your worries to a load of other
people.
Well,
that's kind of what it's sounding like,
have you been?
Yeah.
Have you done one yet?
No, I haven't done it. I've got all the paperwork through. It starts on the 1st of April.
Yeah, it's an April Fool's joke.
I did
see what he's
I
done.
I did wonder that.
He's just taking the piss. Your doctor, I tell you, he sees you coming. But yeah. I can't, I'm not sure I would allow you to go to this. Not only will you try and take over and you'll practice your speech and you'll be up there and you'll make notes. I know you because you've got your old teleproducer's head on.
Yeah, I probably want to be the most interesting.
Yeah, you'll be up all night before typing it out.
Yeah,
oh, what else am I worried about? Let's have something really unusual that nobody else in the class will have and they'll all be really jealous of me.
Yes.
But you'll catch other people's anxieties
I know,
as well.
This is what I'm worried about. Oh, dear. Yes, this is... See what I did there. No, I think that is a danger, isn't it? Because obviously it is a bit contagious. I mean, you and I are quite bad.
We're
with
very
each
bad.
Other.
We egg each other.
Yeah,
on.
We do. I know, as all good hypochondriacs do. So I can see
sometimes
what's
when you
happen.
Come stay with me, and I hear that you're up in the night, and I think, oh, Judith's worried, and then I start worrying about what you're worried about.
Do you?
Yeah, secondary, and I'm lying in bed thinking I can't sleep because Judith's worried.
Secondary worrying.
Yeah.
So yes, I think there is a big danger that.
But I don't
that
think
I don't...
you've got anything really. Bad to worry about at the moment.
Touch wood. I'm touching
okay,
wood.
Okay, I'm touching wood.
Wood. Yeah,
we're
yeah,
all touching
yeah.
wood here. Your health is good.
And funny enough, that I think that's when the worrying gets really bad. Is
oh,
somehow
God. It's when everything's on an even
yeah,
keel.
Yeah, a little bit, and it's almost like. My subconscious kind of thinks,
like,
ah, but
this good. Yes, where is the big shadow? The shadow
yes.
lurks. The
yeah.
shadow is always there.
Don't get yourself all too, you know,
hoity-toity,
exactly.
miss. Don't you dare to be fucking happy, lady.
Exactly. There is a bit of that. Does that get
yeah,
on with
yeah,
you?
Yeah, absolutely. Because how luck will run out.
Mm, exactly.
Inevitably, luck will run out. So it's going to be. It's, for me, the huge worry is always Phoebe. The absolute, you know, when the phone goes yeah. and, you know, my bowels churn. I sometimes have to go to her. And Sarah Millican talked about this once in one of her stand-up shows. And I have exactly the same thing. It's a worry thing. When I hear her voice on the phone, I'm so anxious that she's phoning because something's gone wrong. I nearly shit myself. I think I might have talked about this. And that's something shared with your worry group. You know,
it is,
even
isn't
if
it?
That's not one you've
yes,
got, just
yes.
say, and I'm just going to throw one into the pot here from my friend Jenny Eclair. Do any of you share this one?
Do you shit yourself?
Do you shit yourself with nerves sometimes? When I just sort of, my bowels just start to push. Mm. Like it's almost
oh, yeah.
like childbirth.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah. Well, it's the adrenaline, isn't it? I mean, but you know what? When Phoebe rings, this happens with Ellen. It doesn't happen with Sienna, actually. But when Ellen rings me, I'm basically, she says, I see that, obviously, I see it's her. So I'm, you know. And my instant reaction, and this obviously is...
Are you all right?
Yeah, exactly. It's to think, why is she ringing? Why is she ringing? And so that, and just, you know, just in that first millisecond of her saying the first word... I kind of know
whether she's all right.
Whether she's all right or not.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm sort of bracing myself. I am. I am mentally thinking. Right. Okay. Right. Now, just prepare
okay,
for the worst.
And the thing is, I think with both you and I think if somebody does throw a bit of a bombshell shit thing into our faces, we cope better.
We cope quite well.
Quite well, because there have been moments where I have had those phone calls. You know, there's that. The one in the middle of the night where it's, Mum, I've had everything snatched, my handbag snatched, my phone, I'm in a police cell and all
oh,
that sort of
God.
Thing. And then, but her big fear, this was funny actually, because Phoebe was such a, she's such a goody-goody really. Her big worry was that she had, I think she had a fake passport or something like that, so she could get into clubs. You know, there was all that thing in the... So she's 30 now, so it would be about 15 years ago. She was about 15, 16.
Well, she actually had a fake passport.
Yeah, yeah. Blimey. She doctored a passport. I think.
Did she? What is yours?
Well, I can't know. It was somebody else. I don't know. I mean, I'm not... She had some fake ID, and I think Jeff got a bit involved, because you know you've got... You've got some forgery skills, being a designer and all this kind of thing. And she was absolutely terrified that this would all be found and it would backfire on her and all that kind of thing.
I bet.
But anyway, so, it is. But I do deal with disaster. I go into a nicely calm, very slowed down mode. And I think most of us do. It's the worry of the worry of the worry, isn't it?
It is. It's the what ifs. It's the what ifs.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, obviously, you know... to a certain extent, if something does happen, then yes, I know what you mean. I'm quite a rallier. I rally.
Oh, Judith, you're the ultimate girl guide. If anything happened to me, I'm sorry, but I'm going to phone you. You know,
shit.
I'm going to call my mum. No, I can't just keep calling my mum. She's 90. She doesn't want anything to do with any
God.
Of my worries.
God, this is quite a responsibility.
My sister's too strict and horrible. My brother would just take the piss. I can't worry, Phoebe. I'm sorry. You're next in
line.
Well,
I'm honoured.
Right, well, you go into that worry group.
Did
and
I
you tell
you?
Them
okay.
that you're not just carrying your own worries.
Yes, exactly.
You've got a few of mine
I've
on
got all
top.
These other hangers on.
Yeah,
like Jenny Eclair.
Tell me what.
Yeah, did I ever tell you about how bad I was in a crisis once in a car hire in Portugal?
No, I want to hear the story though. Did you get
well, I might have told
you
so. I
did.
Oh no, it was terrible. It was terrible. So basically, we hired this villa right years ago. Sienna was tiny in a little car seat, and and we hired this two-door car. So basically, when we got the details of this villa, it said, you know, please be very careful. There's this open level crossing.
Oh, God. Okay. No,
and it hasn't got a barrier. One. So, you know, just when you arrive, got to be really, really careful, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Was Sienna walking?
Oh, no, she was in a baby seat.
Oh, right. Yeah, so she can't crawl out.
No,
okay.
No. But anyway, so obviously we got to the villa and thought, oh, God, yeah, it's a bit dangerous, isn't it? We're really careful, really careful, really careful. And then I was driving and this car, and it was only a two-door, so Mike was in the back, Sienna was in the front in a baby seat, right? Yeah. And the car that we'd rented, it just kind of wasn't very easy to get in reverse. You know, it was one of those things.
Gears.
Yeah.
It was sort of bad.
Yeah. So anyway, so we got a bit. I got a bit slapdash about this railway crossing because we always had to go over it. So this one day, so I just got that bit too close to it. You know, and I looked because we never saw any trains. Yeah. Looked right, this bloody great train coming, massive train.
And you were on, and
I wasn't on it at that stage, so I thought. And this is the crisis, obviously. So the nightmare crisis. I thought, right, reverse. Well, I didn't think it. I just tried to get it in reverse. And I couldn't get it into reverse. And the more I tried to get it into reverse, the more I rolled towards the
line.
It's
only because you are sitting here in this studio that I know that this story doesn't have an appalling
ending. It was terrible.
Ending.
It was terrible. Mike was in the back and he kept saying to me, go on, go on. Go on, because
well, what does that
out.
Mean? That's not
precisely.
Does he mean proceed?
Well, exactly.
Go on straight ahead.
No, what he was? What
or does he mean? Go on, get it into reverse.
Yeah, well, I assume that he meant come on quickly, come on. So I kept trying to get it into reverse, and at this stage, I was on it. I promise you, I was on the bloody railway line, and the thing started to toot. But what he was trying to say, I think, is go into first gear.
Yeah.
Stop trying to get. Just go into first gear. And I kind of didn't, and I kind of froze, and I just kept doing it, and eventually my brain obviously thought, no, I'd just go forward. And honestly, there was only, Mikey, who is not given to exaggeration, 2 seconds.
Oh, Judith.
It was really close.
Awful.
It is, isn't it?
Awful story.
Nearly killed all three of us.
Oh, but I'm very glad that you lived to tell the tale, but, yeah. You know.
You're still going
to
ring me first.
But if you run out of material and you worry at group...
Oh, I can bring it out.
Bring it up and say everything. Ever since then, I've felt responsible for everything because I could have... I could have wiped my entire family out.
I think you should be coming to this worry group as well.
I could just goad you from the sidelines and just cheer you on. Do the one about. No, like a sort of heckling thing.
Flesh it out.
And then when some people are doing the boring little niggly worries, I can go, heard it, done that, been there, boring. Come on, give us something better than that.
Yeah.
Well, are you not doing? We're doing everything we can though to keep our mental health in as good a nick as we can. Both of us make some attempts. I mean, you're better than me because you go outdoors. I sort of forget the fresh air thing being good for me.
Yeah, you're terrible. You don't need it, do you?
I barely take a gulp of anything that isn't stale. But I do my yoga, even though I've been quite ill, and you know this whatever I had. There's about 2 weeks, I think, to completely clear. But I did a little yoga class the other day. I did a little Ashtanga yoga class.
What does that mean? Does that mean advanced?
No. It's a type of yoga.
Oh, okay.
And there's sequences. Anyway, and our Phoebe came with me. She just happened to be...
Oh, nice chummy.
Yeah, it was all chummy. And I said, because she's not a member of my gym, because she doesn't live... You know, she lives in New Cross. I'm in Camberwell. Have you done an exercise class with a daughter?
I did. Yeah, I have done, but it's annoying.
Slightly competitive.
Yes.
ever so slightly.
On your part or hers?
Both. We're both
really?
Keeping an eye on each other. And because she's secretly been doing quite a lot of yoga in New Cross and really advanced because she used to be absolutely useless. And now she's quite good. And her balance is very good, which is something that makes me very angry because I can't balance at all because obviously I'm too het up and too furious. And
old?
No, it's still nothing because there are older people than me that can balance quite well.
Oh, right.
I think it's because I've got very small feet. And I actually genuinely cannot balance on them.
Right.
And I think it's because I drink as well. I do. All these terrible feelings go through me when I'm trying to balance and I can't balance. I think, well, I've got something congenitally wrong with me. It's because I drink alcohol. I drink too much alcohol. That's why I must be a bit pissed now. I'm not pissed. I only had 2 glasses of wine last night. What's wrong with me? Anyway, Phoebe was balancing. And then she does the wheel. You know, when you go backwards into a crab, she did that.
She never did.
She did that. And I felt this pride went through my body.
I bet.
I thought, oh, well done, Phoebe. And then I sort of thought...
You didn't have a go, did you?
No, I didn't, because I knew I wasn't going to be able to do that. But I did a good hand. I did a good headstand instead.
You can do a headstand?
Yeah, of course I can do a headstand. Yeah,
you can do a headstand?
Yeah, of course I can. Yeah,
that
quite good.
Really impressive.
I used to be really good. Yeah. Yeah,
no, I've never been able to do a headstand.
No, yeah, well, you're Pilates, aren't you, rather than yoga? It's a bit of
namby-pamby, really. Yeah, yeah. But do you remember when you were at school? Did you used to? You just brought back handstands.
Yeah. And going over into the crab.
And going over into the crab at birthday parties that got really boring on the lawn. Yeah.
Or did you do that thing in the playground as well, where one girl did a handstand up against the wall?
Yeah.
And then with her legs wide open.
Yes.
And then another girl went up and put her legs open as well. And then about eight of you did it.
Oh, no, I never did that.
Oh, no, though, we were really good at that.
You must have been.
Yeah.
But also, the other thing that's just come back and I haven't thought about it in 40 years is that, of course, you couldn't have your knickers showing, could you? Because obviously the boys were in the playground as well. So we used to tuck our
We didn't care. We
did
were northern
not?
And we didn't care. We were some quite common girls in my class. Some of them, I don't think, wore knickers. To be quite honest, I could name names, but I'm not going to.
Well, I don't know if these days, I bet it'd be really frowned upon, don't you think? I bet these days you wouldn't be allowed to.
They'd have a version of my long-legged knickers underneath the...
Yeah, handstand knickers.
Handstand knickers. That's what they should remarket the Lady Chafing knickers, the long-legged knickers.
For the younger market.
For the younger market. Yeah. Or for the older woman who still thinks she's got something. And just call them handstand knickers.
I think that's a very small market.
I
think it's one. I think it's just
me, isn't it? I'm wearing my handstand knickers. I've got them on. I can do anything I like. Okay, now the other thing we've been doing quite a lot of while I've been recuperating from my illness.
Oh, yeah.
What television watching? Have you been watching?
I've been doing a lot of television.
We've been a bit unemployed. We're waiting to see if our big project's going to come into fruition, aren't we?
I know.
So we're just, we're biding our time.
Oh, do you know what? Because it's the best bit about winter, isn't it? You know,
slight
fire on.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. Fire, nice fire, a bit of mint tea, maybe the odd, you know, nice few bit of kettle crisps or something, and some drama. Yeah, I've been watching it. But what have you been watching?
I've been watching White House Farm Murders, and that is the one about Jeremy Bamber. You know, there's this terrible case, and he blamed it on his sister.
God, yes, I've been watching it too.
Yes, well, I've been watching it more than you, because not only... Well, because not only am I watching the drama, get this, I've downloaded onto my Audible a book that came out about the murders, which is, I mean, because I haven't got it in book form, I've got it on Audible, but it's 16 hours long, and it is forensic in the details of it's basically...
It's like an open university.
The university. It's a course on a murder,
you are
a family murder.
Taking your television seriously.
I'm doing the research. I'm becoming a bit... And Jeff's been listening to it as well.
Gosh, you really are into it.
We both know quite a...
I'm fascinated.
We're actually fully trained detective now.
Listen, I want to know why they keep showing us the field, because they keep showing us the field, don't they? That first of all, it's got full of all the crops.
Yes.
And then this last one I've seen, because I don't think I've seen the one that's just been out, it's all been cut. And they keep showing us that. Is there a reason for that?
Time. No, there's no time, and there's no real reason.
Oh, isn't there?
But the murders happened in August, which I think was harvest. So I don't know.
Yeah,
there's no evidence that gets found in the field, as far as I'm...
Do you think he was guilty? Surely he was guilty.
Well, surely he was. But when you're reading... When you're listening to the book, which is has got a lot of background detail about Sheila's mental state and her breakdowns, but even if she had gone berserk with a gun, she was a tiny little thing. The injection she was on made her very lethargic and made her very physically weak. How did she overpower her 6'4" father? Anyway, it's all very fascinating.
But what I don't understand is... Isn't he still saying
he's
innocent?
He's still proclaiming his innocence, yes.
But how could they try that? If there was an appeal, there couldn't be a trial now, because we've all watched the film, and some of them have even done bloody university courses.
Absolutely, absolutely. I wouldn't want to be on a jury. I'd have to say, listen, I know too much about this.
Exactly.
But I think the only way he could possibly get off is if there was any other forensic... because forensics have changed so much.
I know, and that's
fascinating,
how people
are getting,
isn't it?
Oh, if I was... if I wasn't as creative as I am, and if I had zero imagination, I think, mind you, you probably need a bit of imagination. If I was to retrain again, I think I'd go into forensics.
Would you?
No, probably not. I'd be rotten inside.
I think you'd be very good.
I think I'd get too sort of emotionally involved.
No, I don't think you would. I think as mothers, we already have the basic requirements.
Oh, absolutely. You know. Well, you and your snooping. And I mean, yeah, I've taken up a few floorboards to find Phoebe's diary, of course.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's where they should be recruiting from.
Absolutely. They should just get us on a part-time basis. Just sort of fill in when they're not sure.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because we've got instinct as well.
And we've got instinct as well, you're quite right.
And we can tell if a bloke's eyes are too close together. Because that is always a sign, you know. So I've not been watching Cold Feet, and I know you've been watching Cold Feet.
Well, I think I've always really loved Cold Feet. But as my mother would have said, I think this one's gone off a bit. Oh, it's starting to go off. Well, without trying to, I mean, I obviously don't want to give too much away, but the sort of grandmother character died this last week.
Oh, spoiler.
Do you watch it?
No. We're not going now.
And she's a bit like my mum, actually. And I realised, on the bus coming here, I realised that my mum died 12 years ago today. And the way the character died in Cold Feet was very similar to the way my mother died. And it kind of brought it all back, really.
I was just driving into the car park at Sainsbury's, and I got this very distressed call from you. Yeah, it was bad.
Because we weren't expecting it, you know. She'd had a heart attack, and then she was just, I mean, very much like this character, you know. Ellen went in the night before she died, and, you know, she was writing a shopping list for Tesco's, and it was all back to normal. And then I suddenly got this call saying, you've got to come to the hospital really quickly. And, you know, I got into the room, and Sienna got there too. Sienna and I walked into the room, and she was already, you know, she wasn't conscious, but I think she sort of turned to me, and we both held her hands, and she died about 20 seconds after we went in the room, and it was a little bit like she was waiting for us to go in there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know. It's very shocking when you see somebody die.
Yeah, I did it with my dad, and it was kind of all right, and I'm glad I was there.
Yeah.
We don't like to do it every day.
No, exactly. Yeah. Anyway.
If you're going through anything like that at the moment, we wish you all the best now, and, you know, you've got our love. Anyway, let's we've got a guest. We don't often have guests.
We don't now.
Have you read up? Have you done some?
A little, I have done, yes.
She's
yes.
very clever, isn't she? Right, Dave's going to get Izzy Lawrence.
She's blooming multi-talented, God, I would say.
She's going to show us up. We're going to look a bit thick.
Oh, here we are, aren't we?
And also, she looks a bit like I used to look when I was younger, which is a bit
discombobulating. I know what you mean.
When she comes in, I'm going to sort of see whether she actually does or whether I've just seen a photograph that just looked a bit like what I used to look like. I'll let everyone know.
Let's
get her in. Daisy, do you want to go get her?
Yeah. Can we clap as well?
You can, but if you're going to clap,
you've got to get it right.
No, you've got to clap out of time.
No, don't encourage her to do it.
Yes, come on. Yeah. Oh, I like it. She's really bad.
Oh, it's like a drum circle you get at a festival, isn't it?
I'm now just clapping you, your general crackness at clapping. Well done, you. Izzy Lawrence has joined us. I feel like we should have met before and we haven't. It's quite frustrating.
I always feel this. Well, you see, the thing is, I haven't met you guys before, but I've listened to pretty much every episode I think you've done.
That's weird.
So already I feel like I know all about
Izzy?
You.
Why, Izzy? You're...
It's great. It's a brilliant podcast. Oh. It's really good.
Oh, don't. We'll seize up with embarrassment. See, Judith and I really work well when we feel like everybody's against us.
Oh, well, it's true. I mean, I'm just there just going, I'm so much younger than these people.
There you go. That's fine.
They might be more successful than me, but I have so many years.
Well, not really. This is very, because you're only 35, but you're very tall.
I am massive.
When did you stop growing? Are you still growing?
I reached your height, and I thought I'd just carry on a bit.
Normal height, 5'4".
Exactly, carried on a bit. So I'm 6 foot. So you put me up against the wall with a book on my head, 6 foot.
Yeah, you're striking girl, and she's striking.
She's very striking, but you've got some very striking hair, not dissimilar to Jenny's, to be honest.
I basically nicked her entire career, is my plan.
Yeah,
started stand-up, got a book, now, you know.
Do you know what? I'm tired, you can have it. I'm absolutely knackered.
Some of your corporate work would be lovely.
But do you do stand-up on the stand-up circuit as well?
I do a bit. Well, I've kind of dwindled it down a bit, because I've really specialised in doing history things. So I did a podcast called The Z-List Deadlist, and I've been doing that all
That's
over
a great
place.
Title, by the way.
It's great until you meet an American.
They just don't
exactly.
get it.
Exactly. They're like, the Z list, what's it? And yeah, it's...
Idiots, aren't they? You know, they don't even have egg cups.
What?
They don't understand the concept. In America, you can't get an egg cup. I'm not even joking, Judith.
What?
And it's sweeping the world now. I've stayed in hotels in this country where I've asked for an egg cup and they go, we don't actually have them. And they bought me a shot glass. I think if you're buying, if you're bringing me a shot glass, I'll have an amaretto as well on the side.
How?
So, Z list, dead list. Yeah. Okay, who've you... Explain the Z list, because I love this.
It's about obscure people from history. It's about the people you've never heard of. So I've had you know, famous people coming on. So I have Grisha Jones talking about, you know, people and everybody else talking about... But it's the sort of people who don't ever make the history books because they just don't fit into the narrative, or they don't have a relative who's famous who goes on a train to Derby, you know, and finds out about their past.
And are they sort of civilians, or are they... No, are they done they, sort of...
We've had the most famous man in the world on it.
And he's Alexander, not famous.
Well, he is kind of Alexander von Humboldt. And people go, oh, yes, Alexander von Humboldt. And what did he do? And everybody goes, oh, exactly.
And but did he split the atom?
No, he didn't. He discovered... This is my favourite thing about Alexander von Humboldt. He was the second discoverer of Cuba. Think about that for a while.
You can't ever be second. It's never any good being second.
No, he's basically been embraced because he was a gay man, and well, we think he was a gay man. He had a lot of close friendships with men and no females anywhere near him. And so he's been celebrated by the LGBTQ community. And he discovered the penguin, the Humboldt penguin. And the Humboldt...
Do you mean the biscuit or the...
No, not biscuit.
I was being deliberately facetious then.
Oh, I couldn't imagine.
No, so I want to go back to the early stages of your career.
Okay, goodness.
Are you properly educated? Do you have a degree?
I do have a degree.
From which university?
From Bristol.
Okay.
Oh,
is it history?
No, it's not. It's geography.
Okay.
I got a B at A level at history. You know, I'm rubbish at history, and yet this is my entire career. I basically adore it. I picked it up. I read everything. And so I started to do it as a stand-up show and that sort of thing. The British Museum got hold of me and said, oh, you're good. We'll have you.
And tall.
So, exactly. And tall. It does matter. You know,
well, you know, if you're giving a lecture, people at the back can see you properly.
Exactly, it's good.
So you did the geography degree, but then did you get into sketch comedy?
So, no, I just basically, when I was at school, I would go, because they never ID you in comedy clubs. So you could go along to a comedy club and have a drink and watch the comedy, which I adored.
Clever.
And then,
where were you living at this
that
point?
Was what I was living, where was I living then? I was living in Whitney, near York.
Gosh.
Yeah. So I was living in Whitney, going to school in Oxford, but because, you know, classic broken childhood, four parents, two families. So I'd go down to London to see my dad at weekends. Yeah. And then me and my friend Andy would get the train down to Richmond and we would go to a little comedy club Richmond.
Bearcat Comedy Club?
No. It was an old Laughing Horse one. So it's a real open mic kind of like... But I saw, like, you know, great comedians there, you know, sort of get up and have a go.
Yeah, it's a funny... Because, I mean, I remember when I first started on the circuit, seeing sort of big names then.
Mm.
And it's a fantastic education. I do... A comedy club is such a safe space, normally, isn't it?
Yeah.
To be in an audience for teenagers. It's such a great thing, you know. Whenever I think about Edinburgh Festival and, you know, so many teenagers are bored, but you can't be bored seeing comedy. It's just a, you know, so that, right, you see some comedy.
See some comedy, do a little bit of comedy and then think, oh, that's very difficult. And quite hard. Oh, my goodness. I mean, to be honest, who wants to listen to what a 17-year-old girl has to say unless she's Josie Long and is awesome? I mean, I was just doing puns and awful. It was bad. So
you had some confidence though, didn't you? Take some pluck to do that.
I suppose, but it was more sort of like, what the hell am I going to do with my life? Oh no. And so, this looks good. Yeah. I'll try that. Yeah. So at university, I actually, through the comedy circuit, even though I'd only done like three gigs, I actually met Paul Carenza, who took a play up to it, and I got to act in a play called Spinning Jenny.
About Arkwright's spinning?
No, alas, it wasn't. It's just the set splinned halfway through, and the lead character was called Jenny.
Has anybody done a good play about the Arkwright spinning Jenny?
I don't know, but I think you're the woman to write it.
I'd have to do some Googling, wouldn't
you?
I
would have to.
I don't know much about it.
I think there's a calling there, Jenny.
What was it? What was Arkwright spinning Jenny? Was it weaving machine?
Wasn't it a thing that shot through the weaves?
Yeah, so
and back again or something.
It was an automated, it was all part of the Industrial Revolution.
It's taking women's power away. This is the thing that we had power over, you know, the fabrics and that sort of thing, and suddenly...
I mean, mean, that's something you do come back to in your work, isn't it? Because yes. your first novel, The Unstoppable Letty...
Unstoppable Letty Peg, for those.
Unstoppable
She's
Letty
so excited
Peg.
That she's stumbling over it.
I am absolutely... Yeah. I dribbled quite badly then.
Because you can't wait to get into it.
It is quite difficult to say, The Unstoppable Letty Peg, although managed it quite easily.
Her name's Lettuce as well. But they
I love
to
the name Lettuce.
Really? Yeah,
exactly. Well, it's set in Edwardian times, so you kind of want it. And this came about because I had my friend Naomi Paxton, who is a comedian and historian,
yes, who I have heard of.
On the Z-List Deadlist, and she talked about Edith Garrod, who taught the suffragettes jujitsu.
So did she?
She did. No, genuinely. And this woman was Sandy Hook's Toksvig, kind of. She was 4'11", mm-hmm. okay? And she threw massive policemen over her head. Right?
Wow.
And I was just blown away by this. So much so that I actually went away and I am now a light blue belt in jujitsu with the Jujitsu Foundation. So I fight men a lot.
And you've got the height on your side. I bet you could throw them bloody miles.
It's against you. This is the thing. Jiu-jitsu, you want to... What, you're using their power against them, so you want really to have somebody running at you like with a metal chain full force, and then you duck under them and then they fall over you. But, yeah, with me, I have to stick my leg out. Yeah.
Exactly. So your character...
Yes,
and so she taught the suffragettes jiu-jitsu.
No, my character, Letty Peg, is a made-up character,
right.
But she learns jiu-jitsu from Edith Garrod.
Well, not a little girl, she's 8 or 9?
11. Yeah, okay. So she's like nearly an adult. I mean, I was
okay, so regional, Letty's mum is a suffragette and her dad is a policeman.
Yeah.
Opposite sides in the struggle to get women the vote. Meanwhile, Letty mostly cares about fitting in at school and convincing her parents to let her have roller skates. This sounds great. So who's the book aimed at?
But it's basically Harry Potter age group. So it's 8+. A precocious 7-year-old would love it. But it's that sort of age group. But I've had one really lovely review from like this librarian group in Bristol who sort of said that although it's aimed at children, people at every age will enjoy it.
Well, I'm going to read it because I feel, I need to know more about... Nobody ever taught me about... Oh, this is something to admit here. Nobody ever taught me about suffragettes. In my history lessons at school, it was never covered. We didn't get that far. I think, nor me.
Mad, wasn't it?
All we got was that they were really sort of very quiet, meek ladies who starved themselves, and they were very brave. And gosh, they were brave, but they were mad. Mm. I mean, they were proper. Like, even you had the nice ones who do sort of like charity events, like Bertrand Russell's first wife. She did this massive speech on top of a diving board and jumped in
to
a swimming pool fully clothed. Yeah, Olympic level thing just to start off the. And then they had
how stylish.
They'd have great sort of parades and everything else, and the sewing was immensely good, and all these sort of, like, you can see all the written orders that they do for that. Ladies must march and turn around corners. Ladies on the inside must still march but take smaller steps. You know, this sort of thing going on. But they were also crazy. So the WSPU, which Letty calls WSPU, Women's Social Political Union, I think it is. Anyway, they were very militant. So into the 1913, 1914, they start like blowing up post boxes. Also, they were really bad at it, so they set themselves on fire a lot, which is quite hilarious. Yeah. All these women going to thinking, oh, I've got to put the bomb in the pillar box. Actually, I'll just go get some bacon. And then as they're coming
bang.
Out, yeah, exact bang, and they'd just set themselves on fire. And they also, like, they'd burn, like, you know, they'd go to cricket clubs and they'd burn messages
on the grass.
Yeah, exactly. And they blew up houses and things like that. They were proper...
They were really hardcore.
I didn't realise that.
And
wasn't there quite a lot of vandalism in art galleries and things like that?
Oh yeah, they organised mass window smashing as well. So they'd all time it, you know, all these women walking down the street, and suddenly all of them will get out little hammers and smash the glass of all the shop windows at the same time. So the police were just like, what do we do? But yeah, you're right about the museums. The British Museum banned women.
Really?
Yeah. So in order to get in, we were considered so dangerous that we had to have a man or a letter from a respectable man with us in order to access the British Museum.
Good
we
grief.
Were really considered.
Can you just do the suffragettes in a historical context for us, the dates and all that sort of thing?
Well, my book happens 1910 to 1911, so it's a really small little time.
Okay,
and in that time you have the big event is Black Friday, which is where they basically got been told by the government, oh, we're going to give you the right to vote. And the government go, actually, we're not going to give you the right to vote, but we're going to extend the right to vote for men. So all the working class men can vote, and isn't that nice of us? And the women go, hang on a minute. And it's the same time that Winston Churchill's Home Secretary, and he says, well, can we stop arresting these suffragettes? Because all they do is they sort of lock themselves, you know, they stop eating, yeah. And it looks really bad in the press for us, and they make a huge palaver out of it. So let's just not arrest them. So what you have on Black Friday is women protesting the government's move, and they're, you know, they're coming up against the police who aren't allowed to arrest them. So what do the police do? They beat them up. And they keep coming in, and they keep coming. Mrs. Billinghurst, who is this suffragette who's paralysed, she's in a sort of a tricycle wheelchair. It's a very cool looking wheelchair that she had. But yeah, they upturn her, and just the crowd stamp on her. I mean, it's not in the book the level of sexual assault that went on, but the policemen would lift these women up and chuck them into the groups of men who would just take them into alleys.
Personal context for me, 1910 to 1911. Yeah. My grandmother was born in 1900. So it's really easy for me to kind of imagine her as an 11-year-old girl, you know, going to this, because her sister, I mean, it was a few years later on, was one of the Dick Clegg footballers.
Oh, right.
You know, they were one of the first female football teams. They sort of were incredible. They played in massive stadiums, and they had 2,000 or 3,000 people come out to watch them.
Is this in the north?
Yeah, it was so northern, Judy.
I love the way you said that. Is it?
Oh, is this in the north?
It must be in the north.
Do you know what?
Only northern people find women doing that entertaining.
They played in clogs. Yeah, they did. So could this be a series? Could Letty go on to do other things?
She could do. I mean, there's some big questions left open there, in the hope that it'll sell enough and they'll possibly try another.
It sounds really, really good. Of course, you are clever.
I'm next to you two, and it's a bit, I want to recommend, before we sort of, you know, wrap up and things like that, anybody who's listening to this has to listen to, because you might have read Inheritance and that sort of thing, but you've got to listen to it on audiobook, because it is amazing.
Oh, you mean my one?
Yeah, your one. Because it's if you listen to this, you'll absolutely love your book, because it's amazing.
Do you think Izzy is our youngest guest ever?
Know.
I think she might be.
I think she's borderline, isn't she?
I think she might be.
I think we've had Bryony Kimmings, and she's young, but she's a bit older than you.
See, I go on the comedy circuit, and I'm usually the oldest one on the bill.
Really?
Yeah. They're all young boys who will go, "Hi, Izzy, how are you?" And I'm just like, "Oh my goodness, I can't tell you apart." Oh no.
Do you still like stand-up, or would you?
I do.
Do you want to sort of retire into writing and being a more serious historian?
Basically, I've discovered this thing in my 30s, and it's called money.
Yeah.
And I like to earn that. And the trouble with the comedy circuit. The wages have gone down since I started, and there's no expenses, and expenses have gone up. So it is one of these things of making money out of it is very difficult. And I love to do radio, so I do Making History on Radio 4.
Tell us a bit more about that.
That's
Making
really
History.
Fun.
Our listeners will know that.
Yeah, exactly. This is, you know, Tuesday, 3:30, and it's me and a guy called Tom Holland. I bring a certain level of, you know, I can relate it to Instagram and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know.
What was one of the most recent topics you've done?
Oh my goodness. Well, most recent one was I did. I'm trying to think of an interesting most recent one, but no, the only one I can think of is the John Bull. So English
the
big fat.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, where that came from, and it's actually it's a very convoluted story about how he used to be liberal and then he came to represent conservatives, and he's very anti-foreign and all that, and why it rose up, and it's all to do with Queen Anne not having any kids. But you know, it's everything's to do with Queen Anne not having any kids.
Is it?
You know, have you seen what's it called, the Favourite?
Of course.
Yes. Yeah, that film. But basically, she didn't actually have the rabbits, but she really didn't have any kids.
She didn't have the rabbits.
She didn't have the rabbits.
Oh, I can't. Get out, Izzy. Get out.
She did, you know, have a very tragic. She did sort of have a very close friendship with Sarah Churchill.
You're telling niche, aren't you?
Probably, but I don't know. I quite like not having to wear makeup.
Well, you don't need makeup.
You do on telly.
No, you're okay because you've got dark brows.
Okay. They work.
Yeah. You just need to get rid of that one that's always in everything. You know, the little Lucy
Worsley, the one.
She's good, though.
Do you want the hair grip? The one with the hair grip.
Yeah,
and the
I like Lucy, but there's room for more. There is room for more.
There's quite a lot of.
And isn't there room for the? I think that this. I have a very good feeling in my waters about this.
That pleases me.
I'm thinking this is a children's TV series, if not a film. I think that maybe it's easier to get onto a TV series.
Possibly.
I don't know
either.
But it does sound... We're really impressed and we're so thrilled you came in.
Absolutely.
I'm absolutely genuinely... I mean, it's exactly how you imagine it. I'm just saying
what,
to...
A stinky little room?
No, exactly. Stinky little room.
Can you smell our lunch?
It's
what we had?
Coleslaw? I'm hoping it's coleslaw.
Free zone today.
Really? Yeah. That's sad.
I had a Caesar salad though. I had the chicken Caesar salad from. So there was a mayonnaise content in mine. Did you have some mayonnaise in you, Judith?
I did sneak some mayonnaise into my root vegetable leftovers, yes. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I'm just waiting
for. Missing the coleslaw though.
Yeah, you see, you triggered a coleslaw craziness now.
I know. I haven't had any for about 24 hours. I can't get some.
I cannot cut cabbage without eating a bit of it every single time.
Oh, of course.
I can think of worse vices.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Well, thanks ever so much.
Yes, thank you.
We're very impressed by you. Not only do you look great, you sound great, and you. The book.
She's clever, isn't she?
Yeah.
Very clever.
And if you want to find out more about me, izzy.com. So it's four letters, ISZI. Which is a weird way of spelling it, but I bought the .com when I was 13.
You clever old... That is really smart.
That only cost me £20 a year, that.
You are smart.
Bargain.
This is going to... I can see merchandise.
Can you?
Yeah.
I'm hoping as well it's going to get some little girls involved in self-defence and jiu-jitsu, because it's really good fun. You guys should try it.
This is great. This is a lovely, lovely book, and you've done incredibly well, so I'm going to clap you out.
Oh, wow.
Out of time. Well done.
Jolly well done.
Really well
done.
If you enjoy Older and Wider and would like to support the podcast, please like, subscribe and share.
Tell your friends about it. We need some more subscribers and reviews.
You find us on iTunes. Mind you, if you're not listening to this, you know... kind of fighting a losing battle.
No, it's not. Come on.
You can email the show at olderwiderpod@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, should you fancy that, at Jenny Eclair.
And me on at Grey Pride UK. I never know what my Twitter handle is. Is that what it's called, a Twitter handle?
Whenever you see you say Grey Pride, I always imagine it's a big, proud squirrel. Big, proud, grey squirrel.
Do you?
Sitting there proudly, yes.
Busying away.
Yeah, with a nut, a great nut.
Don't have to take that.